Welcome back, everyone, to the Risk Intel Podcast, powered by SRA Watchtower, where we share risk intelligence with experts from across the banking industry. I'm your host, Ed Vinson, CEO at SRA Watchtower.
Welcome to today's episode of the Risk Intel Podcast. It's great to have Sean Ryan back here with us again today. Sean, thank you for joining us again.
Thank you for having me again. I'm afraid I'm wearing out my welcome, but I do enjoy this topic and this conversation. So thanks again for having me.
Sean, as we've talked about, you've got 30 years of working in this space, and you've seen your share of hidden factories, and we're going to kind of continue on that path here today and talk a little bit about how someone finds a hidden factory inside their organization. I mean, ultimately the fact that they are hidden means they're not apparent, they're not obvious. There are ways to discover those hidden factories and ideally then quantify the impact of them. So I'm interested today in digging into those topics with you a little bit. So let's start with that first point here of how can an organization find where inefficiencies exist or hidden factories are at play?
Yeah, I mean, I think you just described a couple of things that I think are key, right? Hidden factory may not be a term that everyone listening is familiar with. It's really a label that we've applied to this idea that in every process, particularly in a data-driven process or an information-driven process, there are inefficiencies or hidden or not obvious. Maybe not obvious is even better than hidden. No one's intentionally hiding these these inefficiencies from the organization or from their colleagues, or they're just not obvious to everyone. And so that's what makes them hidden. What's the simplest way to describe how you find these things? You ask a lot of questions, right? You take a look at the output that you're trying to deliver, be it a forecast or a decision or a risk rating or a risk assessment. And then you just ask a lot of questions about how you get from the beginning to the end of that particular project or assignment or process. You do process mapping, right? That's a term that pretty many people have probably heard. And you may try to do that on your own, or you may try to gather as many of the people as you can who are associated with that process and get them together to try and map out that process. The term that is thrown around a lot in modern business, is Kaizen. You do a Kaizen event. You get in a room and you really peel apart the process, and you ensure that you have all the people there, and you use visual, visual means to do that. You use the sticky notes and the tear charts, and you put all that stuff or a whiteboard, and you can do a mind map, right? There are a lot of tools that you can use that will allow you to kind of define the process or label the process, if you will. And that in and of itself will reveal some of the hidden factories. And I mentioned in one of the last episodes, we did this on the loss forecast for one of the institutions that I worked for before. And we discovered that there was a particular input, which we all thought had to be this period's input in order to make a good forecast. But what we realized is we could simply speed up the process, shrink the time to output by using last month's input for that particular variable, because it didn't vary so much period to period that we had to wait for it to be current every time. So that was a hidden piece of the factory, right? That was an input that we didn't know. The only way we found that out is by looking at everything side by side at the same time and asking one another questions. Why are we doing it that way? Why are we waiting for that? Why is that piece of the puzzle holding us up? So, I think it's ask questions, process mapping, Kaizen events, those kinds of tools, which we're all probably familiar with, but which I think we should apply to every process in the institution we can.
It sounds like it's a conscious decision to go and look for it, right? So you might stumble across it, right? Perhaps, mm-hmm. right? You realize, well, boy, that person's not available to come to this meeting. What are they doing, right? So maybe it does hit you in the face, but for the most part there, right, you described very purposeful activities.
Yes.
That where you as an organization need to hit the pause button on something else, day-to-day activities, what have you, and say, I'm going to make a conscious effort to kind of dig down into this, kind of go down the rabbit hole, so to speak, right? See what's going on down here. And then all of a sudden, you know, these things are uncovered. Then they become visible. Then they become obvious and quantifiable.
Yeah. And in our world, right, we use what we call risk maturity frameworks, right? And we use those to identify the risk process, whichever one it is, whether it's fair lending, whether it's cybersecurity, whether it's your overall enterprise risk management process, whichever of those risk processes that you want to be deliberate about looking at and looking for the gaps, the opportunities, the potential errors, the potential risks within the risk assessment process itself, you can use a maturity framework. It's one of the tools that is pretty common in the risk management industry. But that is effectively, yes, Ed, just what you said, a deliberate intent to look at one of our processes, to look for hidden factories, inefficiencies, over-engineering, waste, delay, all of those things which can you know, undermine the output.
Right. Let's pick up on this and drill down into this concept of risk and risk management. And you know, right, you mentioned a few other examples that really affect financial institutions more broadly, but right. In the risk space specifically, right, the risk maturity framework is an interesting diagnostic to use. But let's talk a little bit more about how you'd go about discovering hidden factories that are related to risk management.
Sure. Well, first of all, you recognize that in risk management, the financial institutions, its entire purpose is to manage risk, right? It manages this thing called a margin, which is the spread between the rate you're lending at and the rate you're paying on your deposits. And so every single process is about managing that risk. And so risk exists in multiple domains within a financial institution. And so one of the first things you have to recognize is that you have to be able to identify, measure, and quantify that risk in a variety of places within the bank, not just your traditional places, but all of the places, like all the operational risks, right? Where, you know, if this branch closes, is something going to happen over here at this other branch? Right? There's lots of different domains in which you're going to have to identify risk. So you want to know where the data inputs come from, right? You're going to have to figure out where does the data that I need come from. And to the extent that you can pull all that data into a single place, as opposed to leaving it where it is and needing to go there and get it every single time you want to evaluate that risk, right? You've kind of eliminated one of the potential inefficiencies that you have in measuring risk to the extent that you standardize those measures, right? So if you can use a tool or a technique or a framework to take what might be disparate measures across various domains and standardize them in such a way so that they're comparable across different risk categories or risk attributes, now you've done something to help yourself remove the factory, if you will, right? You're looking at a standard output that allows you to make, you know, to make decisions around it. Now, the other thing I would say about quantification is to the extent that all of that can be automated, right? You want to automate as much of that as possible. You don't want to have to, I talked a little bit about the delays last time, but you don't want to have to pick up the phone and say, Ed, can you please provide me with your risk metrics around X, Y, or Z? To the extent that I can open a tool and the metrics have either been automatically loaded into that tool so that you could look, so that I can look at them, or you've loaded those metrics into that tool so that I can just open the tool and look at them and I don't have to contact you. But that removes all of that, some of that hidden factory aspect of it, right? It reduces the potential for me to not be able to get the information I need when I need it.
Yes, absolutely. Right. It is there waiting for you. Right. One of the key aspects, I think, that you know, is probably that one of the greatest contributors to the cost associated with a hidden factory is not having that data at your fingertips. And then, as you said, having to go and ask for it and wait for it. And then clarify whether it's there or ask a question.
Transform it, right? Modify it in some way in order to get it to fit the question that I'm trying to answer, as opposed to the reason it might have been produced in the first place, right? All of these things require a factory to do, right? There's some type of process, the identification, the collection, the moving. You know, you think about you know, lean agile is a very popular terminology in the business world today. Well, if the data has to take time to get from one place to another, it may have lost its viability in that time that it takes. So you want all of those things from identification all the way to usage to be done,
right.
You know, in a systematic way with as little manual intervention as possible, with as much automation as possible, with steps, with validation steps along the way, so that we know that if we identify an error in that process in the data that we're going to use to make decisions, there's a way to identify that and validate that data somewhere within that chain. All of those things, again, to the extent that there are hidden processes or hidden factories that are manipulating the data to get it from where it starts to the end user, all of that just creates so much risk for error, inaccuracy, delays, timeliness, all the things that you can think of that would make data not useful to you, right?
Yes. Now you've concentrated here, and we've talked here about the, you know, where data comes from, and the, like you said, right, the, you know, identifying, measuring, and quantifying it, coming from multiple places, multiple domains. I think the other lens here potentially to think about is, how's it consumed? Where is it utilized, right? And you know, that perhaps if you think about that end state, it helps you then take a step back and say, well, what are the sources? Where does it come from? What needs to be compiled? Because this information and this analysis feeds into a conversation with a regulator or a board risk committee or a management leadership team or an operating team, right? So you have multiple different places where it's consumed, and then you can also work backwards from there and say, well, what is it that they are consuming, and how does that then get created in the first place?
Yeah, you absolutely, you know, it's a cliche, but you begin with the end in mind, right? You want the data from the identification through that chain that we were just talking about to be purposeful and to be built and constructed in such a way that when you arrive at the output, the decision maker doesn't have to contemplate all of those questions and those steps in the chain that got the data there. They can simply, they know they have. They have data that's ready for consumption for the purpose. It's purpose fit, right? It's there for a board meeting, or it's there for a regulatory exam, and it's there for a risk committee to meet and digest. And it's already in the format and in the depth, right? We've all heard way too much about packages that go to boards of directors or executive committees that are thousands of pages long or hundreds of pages long. Right. We're humans. We're still humans. Most of us don't have the chip embedded in our head yet. And we're not able to look at that information and make decisions on it. So we want it in a way that the person who's receiving can make the decision. For some reason, this strange restaurant analogy popped into my mind. Like, you want your food consumable when it shows up to play. You don't want them to bring you the raw chicken and some uncut vegetables to make your stew or your soup. You'd prefer if it was already a soup when it got to your plate so that you can eat it. Well, the same thing is the case with the data information we use to make risk decisions, right? You want it in the format and in the context that allows the decision maker not to worry about where it came from, not to worry about if it's accurate, not to worry about if it's timely, but to use it immediately to evaluate the decisions that they're contemplating. That's the point of eliminating the hidden factory. That's the point of using tools and technologies to collect and disseminate this information. It's so that it's fit for purpose. When it's time to make decisions, all of that other stuff has already taken place. And you have data that's actionable. You have information, information.
Right. You mentioned one last point there that I just would love you to pick up on, because you mentioned, you know, the tools that are in place to collect this information, right? We've talked a lot about the people, the process, the data itself, but I know that we've certainly undertaken an exercise where we've looked at all the various different tools that we have in place. You know, are they duplicative, right? Have they been licensed in different silos? So that point of tools is an interesting one, where a tool can be a great enabler, but without controls and guideposts, it also could potentially be a contributor to this hidden factory.
Right. It could be the cause of you if you have allowed tools to propagate like within the silos of your organization, any part, whether that be a bank or whether that be a manufacturing facility or whether that, right, you know, you have the manufacturer. So imagine that one group's working in you know, inches and feet, and the other group's working in centimeters and meters. Well, you got a really big problem there. Right? That's an extreme example, but I think about in our own shop, right? I think, you know, we have three or four tools that we use to process certain financial transactions. That's clearly too many. Clearly, one of my jobs is going to be to eliminate some of those things. Well, it's the same thing in risk management, right? You want as few tools, as little potential for transformational error from the source data to that output that we've been talking about. And so, to the extent that you can have tools that can do all of those things from capture the data to transform the data to record the decisions that were made along the way, store the process documentation, store the justifications that were made with respect to risk data, store the opinion. I mean, this is risk, right? It's not that the opinions of the people that are managing risk don't matter. Store their perspective and insight and understanding of the particular risk, right? You want to have as much of that information in a single place as you can. To the extent that it exists in multiple locations, just makes it harder for us to understand what's really going on. And the other thing that you have by using tools that are aligned and integrated together, the other thing that you get is you get an ability to compare across silos. I talked very, you know, at the beginning of standardization. Well, one of the points of standardization is that you can see how there are risks related across various risk categories or attributes or indicators. So there's certainly value in our tools being aligned with one another. There's certainly value in not having a proliferation of tools, right? Having as few tools as possible. You'd like your vendor risk management tool and your audit tool and your fair lending assessment tools. Like you'd like all those tools to work together very effectively to feed into the same process, to transform data in the same way, your financial ledger, right? All of those things, you'd like them to all be speaking to one another effectively so that you can measure risk in real time with as standard and as transparent an output as you can get your hands on.
I think you summarized that beautifully, Sean. Great content. I really appreciate all the thoughts. You know, your note in the middle of beginning with the end in mind, I think is a great comment for people to think about as they begin to look for their hidden factories, right? Making a conscious decision that you want to go down that rabbit hole.
That's right.
Ask a lot of questions. Undertake the deliberate effort of process mapping, the Kaizen events, right? Getting together and doing the work, right? You're not going to, you're certainly not going to discover the complete picture accidentally. Maybe you'll get bits and pieces, but leaning in, really doing the work, and acknowledging the fact that risk exists in multiple domains, and that you need to bring all that data together and bring it together in a single place and standardize it. And ideally have automation in that process. A lot of great themes there that I think we've left people with so that they can do the work to discover the hidden factories as it relates to risk management.
Yeah, and I know you're wrapping there, but if you wait for the accident to discover your hidden factory, you're probably going to be left with a problem that is a challenge for the organization or the institution that really isn't ready for. So you should be deliberate. You should use tools to identify the hidden factory so that it becomes something you don't have to worry about. You don't have to worry about the accidents occurring.
Well, I think that's your call to action there, Sean.
Oh, right? Goodness gracious. Yeah, I got to do that.
That's it. Don't wait for the accident. That's the call to action for people to hopefully to
I agree.
Take away from this. Thank you for the time, Sean. We're going to switch gears and have some other guests join us to talk about specific risk-related areas, risk and controls, process risk assessments, program risk assessments, enterprise risk management, and really look at hidden factories in those specific areas in subsequent episodes. So thank you very much for teeing up those subsequent conversations.
Thanks for having me, Ed. I hope people aren't sick of me. But I know we'll have some other folks join us in the next episodes and keep this conversation rolling. Thank you.
Thanks, Sean. Take care.
Bye now.
For more information on SRA, please visit srarisk.com. Watch or listen to our weekly Risk Intel podcast series, or follow us on LinkedIn to learn more.